Hey, it's Mistress Carrie reporting for duty from MCHQ for episode 107 of the Mistress Carrie podcast. And before we get to this week's guest, Pat Badger from Extreme, I want to put a quick plug in for the Mistress Carrie Backstage Pass on Patreon. If you're a fan of the radio show, Cocktails in the War Room, and the Mistress Carrie podcast, and you just need more Mistress Carrie in your life, get a Mistress Carrie Backstage Pass. You get exclusive access to photos, blogs, concert ticket giveaways, coupon codes for discounted merchandise in the official online Mistress Carrie store, travel updates, and so much more. And every month we do an exclusive live stream Q&A. Matter of fact, it's coming up this Sunday night. You can click the Patreon link at MistressCarrie.com or go to Patreon.com/MistressCarrie. And now to our guest this week, Pat Badger from Extreme. And Pat also started an Eagles cover band called the Dark Desert Eagles. And as you'll hear from this week's episode, he's a pretty busy guy. The Dark Desert Eagles are playing at Indian Ranch in Webster coming up this Saturday, June 25th. They're also playing at the Hampton Beach Casino Ballroom on July 22nd. And Extreme have got a bunch of dates, including at Indian Ranch on September 2nd, the Hampton Beach Casino Ballroom on September 3rd, and Extreme is opening up for Aerosmith at Fenway Park coming up on September 8th. Tickets for all of the shows are on sale right now, and I put the links in the show notes of this podcast to make it easy. Pat and I talked about everything while he was in traffic trying to get to Logan Airport to head to Cleveland. We talked about his upbringing and musical influences. We talked about songwriting, his farm animals, TikTok, Eddie Van Halen, where guitar tone comes from. And we even talked about Extreme appearing on the soundtrack for the latest season of Stranger Things. So allow me to introduce you to Pat Badger from Extreme.
Hey, what's up? This is Sully from Godsmack. Strap on those boots, baby, because you are now in the trenches of the war room with the one and only Mistress Carrie right here on the Mistress Carrie podcast.
What's up? This is Joe Rogan, and you're listening to Mistress Carrie.
Her hair is so lovely. With the eyes.
Hey, this is Brent from Shinedown, and you're listening to Mistress Carrie. Hey, Carrie, go put your bra on, girl.
Hey, this is Steven Tyler, and you'll be listening to the baddest bitch in Boston, Mistress Carrie.
What's up? This is Aaron from Stain, and you're listening to Mistress Carrie.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters, and you're listening to the one, the only, Mistress Carrie.
Hey, this is David from the band Disturbed, and you're listening to the baddest bitch in Boston, Mistress Carrie.
Hi, Bruce Dickinson here from Iron Maiden. Yes, indeed, Miss Whiplash herself, Mrs. Carrie, is here to unchain your brain.
Hi, this is Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers. You're listening to Mistress Carrie.
This is Dennis Leary. You are listening to my favorite, Mistress Carrie.
Hey, this is Corey from Stone Sour, and you're listening to, you have the privilege of listening to Mistress Carrie.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Badger.
Mr. Carey.
You are the second.
How are you doing?
You're the second member of Extreme that I've had on the show.
Really? Who was the first?
Nuno Beecha in the height of COVID.
Oh, wow. All right.
And it's a good thing that it was a podcast because he likes to say fuck a lot.
You know, I just saw Nuno this weekend. It was the first time Extreme has played since the pandemic started. Can you believe that?
That's crazy.
Yeah, we just haven't been out and about and literally just played our first show out in California this past weekend.
He was in the middle of COVID. That's when I talked to him. And he was like, you know, when I was a kid, all we wanted to do was not go to school and get high. And we had to go to school and pot was illegal. Now pot's legal and the government's telling kids not to go to school. He's like, what the fuck? We got screwed.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of things that we kind of got screwed on. I mean, we didn't have internet porn back in those days.
Yeah, right? You had to work for it back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, you know. So, yeah, things have changed a lot, haven't they?
Yeah, seriously. Well, where did you ride out the pandemic? Now that the world is opening back up and you're going back out on the road, where did you hunker down through the height of the craziness?
Well, pretty much at my own house. I live near Newburyport in Massachusetts. And I socially distanced out on my boat in the summer. and, you know, just kind of stayed home a lot. I got a small farm, so, you know, I wasn't afraid to be around the animals and stuff. You know, they didn't, can't carry COVID. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. I kind of just stayed home like everyone else. I got a little studio on my property, so I ended up recording a bunch of stuff and just, like, kind of messing around out in the studio. That kind of kept me sane since there was no live shows happening.
Do you still got the alpacas?
I still have a couple of alpacas. And I also have a donkey, got some chickens, and I have three Nubian goats that drive me absolutely crazy.
You got to get a TikTok for your farm. I love watching TikTok videos about people's farm animals.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, I should, actually. I don't even have a TikTok account.
See, you don't have to do the funny dances. You could just make videos about your animals.
True. I actually should. That would be a good TikTok.
Is that where you are right now?
No, I'm actually driving in the car right now.
Really? You sound good.
Yeah, I'm on my Bluetooth in the car, and I'm just watching the gauge, like, you know, going down to... I'm thinking of all the hundreds of dollars I'm burning in gas right now, and I'm on my way to Logan Airport. Actually, I'm going out to Cleveland. I got a gig tomorrow.
Oh, damn!
Yeah.
Well, I've only had a few interviews where people have been in the car, including Sully. I interviewed him while he was driving to Florida. Your phone sounds way better than his.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, maybe he didn't have the Bluetooth hooked up right.
I don't know. I'm not going to be the one to tell Sully he's doing something wrong.
Uh-huh.
So, you figured it out, obviously.
Yeah, well, you know, I just, you know, plug the thing in and it magically connects to my stereo. So, I think your voice sounds good. It's been so long since I've seen you.
I know. I mean, it's literally been since before WAAF went off the air, which I'm still, you know, over two years later, still kind of in shock that it happened.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah, things have changed a lot. All those old radio stations I loved are no longer in existence. And every venue we play is some corporate sponsor. And, you know, it's all that stuff.
Yeah, it's just...
Money makes the world go around.
It's just a completely different thing. But on the other side, you know, you can do really cool things like be on the Mistress Carrie podcast, which gets listened to in like 130 countries now. And the radio show is all over the country and all of the military bases and all the Navy ships. So it's pretty cool.
That is amazing. Good for you.
So for you know, whatever gets taken away, sometimes you get something cool in its place, you know?
That is true. Yep.
And having my own studio to hunker down in during the height of COVID didn't suck. So I totally understand what you mean, like hunkering down. I didn't have farm animals, but I had my pug, and that was good enough.
You have a pug?
Yeah, I've always had pugs. Yeah, her name's Wednesday. She has her own Instagram.
Nice.
She doesn't have TikTok, though, but she has Instagram.
Nice.
Is your gig in Cleveland with the Dark Desert Eagles, or are you going to play with the guys in Extreme?
I actually have been moonlighting playing in the third band.
What?
I'm juggling a lot of balls right now. So
Hold on. Okay, I'm just letting that joke go. I'm not even going there. So what's
wow,
the third gig?
You got a dirty mind. I didn't even say it meaning it that way.
I know, but that's what I do, Pat. You've known me long enough to know that's what I do.
So besides my, you know, I've kind of entered this fun tribute world where, you know, it's like going back to the egg and like playing the songs you grew up listening to and watching everyone sing every lyric because they're all like monster hits, right? So My buddies have a Journey tribute band, pretty much the best one in the country, called Voyage.
I love them. I love them. They're amazing.
Yeah, so they needed someone to fill in on bass for the summer. So I said, hell yeah, I'll learn all these Journey songs. This is a blast. So I'm headed out right now to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. We're playing at like a private event tomorrow night.
That is insane.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. I'm like, one day I'm playing bass in Extreme, and we just opened for Cheap Trick. And then now I'm on my way to do a Voyage gig. And then I get back, and next weekend I'm playing a Dark Desert Eagles gig down in Webster, Mass at Indian Ranch.
Yeah, that's so Saturday, June 25th. So you got to make sure that you're not playing the wrong song with the wrong band.
I got to worry that I got to bring a guitar instead of a bass to that gig. I got to open up the case and make sure I got the right guitar in there. It's insanity.
I have all of your dates for the Dark Desert Eagles and for the Extreme dates that you have coming up, because you're going to be back at Indian Ranch in September with Extreme. They're all in the events calendar at mistresscarrie.com, because you have a lot to keep track of.
It's insane. In fact, the other night I played a voyage gig at the Hampton Beach Casino, and the guys who manage it and own the place, they came out on stage and presented me with an airbrushed baseball cap. Like, they call it the Hampton Beach Crown. And because I'm the only person that they believe has ever played the venue three times with three different bands in the same summer. they called it the hat trick. So, like hat trick, obviously. So, I played there with Boyd's, and I got a gig coming up with Dark Desert Eagles there at Hampton Beach July 22nd, and then Extreme in September. Things are getting pretty... This summer is like, after 2 years of no gigs, suddenly I said yes to everything.
You know what? I think the last time I physically saw you in person, didn't we bump into each other in L.A. at a Steel Panther gig?
Absolutely. That is where I saw you, isn't it?
And I walk in and I'm like, why is Pat Badger here? And then immediately was like, why wouldn't he be here? Of course he's going to be at a Steel Panther gig in L.A.
Was that at the Whiskey?
Yes, exactly. It was their album release party.
The Whiskey.
Yeah, right?
Yep. That was the last time I saw you, huh?
Yeah, which was a while ago.
That was, because I think that was maybe even before the pandemic, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't even remember why I was in California. I think we were supposed to play outdoors with Sammy Hagar out in Huntington. And that gig, like, somehow got canceled because the town didn't have the right permits or some shit like that. And then I'm like, well, I already got the plane tickets to California. Let's just go out for a couple of, days. And I brought my girlfriend out to see Hollywood. She had never been there. So I said, we got to go by the Whiskey. You got to see where, like, Van Halen got signed and where the Doors used to play,
We spent a lot of time going around the cemeteries and stuff. Have you ever done that?
I have not.
It's pretty crazy. We went and saw where Ronnie James Dio was buried. We went and saw Lemmy from Motorhead, where his ashes are interred. We went to Chris Cornell's grave.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty.
That's kind of a dark activity for,
Those Hollywood cemeteries, though, like just walking through, first of all, they're gorgeous because these people had the money for the good marble, But, I mean, we saw Judy Garland's, like, massive, like, grave, and it was kind of cool. Like, I didn't think it was morbid, and it was cool to be able to go and, like, pay tribute to Dio, Like, it was, the one that hit me the hardest was Cornell.
Yeah.
Because that was pretty recent, and it was just like, oh, man, like, having had him on the show so many times,
Yeah, and anytime, someone takes their own life like that, and it's pretty, it's tragic. It's sad. But,
especially when you love the music so much.
Yeah. I mean, that guy was freaking amazing, But
I mean, just in the time since I saw you last, we lost Neil Peart. We lost Eddie Van Halen. I mean, it's unbelievable.
I know. It's really quite depressing. All the elder statesmen, rock stars, all passing. In the next 5-10 years, I mean, God only knows. And all these guys are pushing 70. Paul McCartney just turned 80.
Yeah.
And so all these guys got to be thinking about seeing the finish line.
Well, a lot of these artists are selling off their music catalogs to all of these publishing houses and stuff for the big fat money, probably because they know, A, I'm not going to live much longer, and B, I can't leave this to my idiot kids. I better cash in now.
Cash in now and spend it up.
Yeah, right?
That's a whole other thing. Like these, everyone's selling their publishing catalog, which is, it's crazy the money that's getting thrown out there.
I think a lot of people don't understand like the different ways that artists can make money off of a song, because you could make some money if you cover another artist's song, but then the original artist makes money from the songwriting.
Right.
But the real money is if you write the song, you make the money from your version, and then other people cover it, and then they got to pay you for basically doing nothing.
And then bands figured out that, you know, the labels were making their cut on some of these songs. They'd re-record the song so it's not the original master and cut the label out of the picture.
Yeah. Taylor Swift just did that, right? Because her masters got sold, so she went in and re-recorded all the music, and all the radio stations are now playing her versions. So the original masters that people paid hundreds of millions of dollars for, they're not even making as much money off of them as they thought.
And like you said, there's different ways that artists do make money. Like you have like these sync licenses, like if your song appears in a movie or a commercial or something. I got a flurry of texts the other day. Hey, your song's in Stranger Things, that song Play With Me, that we put out back in 1988 or 89. Suddenly it's like in this big, huge hit TV show. And our kids thought that was really fucking cool, by the way.
Have you seen Stranger Things? The show is amazing. And the Duffer Brothers have captured the 80s in a way that I didn't think was possible.
You know, I've only seen the episode or the part that our song, Extreme Song, Play With Me. It was in the first show, the new season.
The show's really good. I mean, it's definitely a little sci-fi and stuff, but it's really good.
Yeah, everyone says that. And it's funny. I don't know if you remember. You remember the movie Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure?
Of course.
Yeah, so that's where the song Play With Me originally came out. It's before our first album even came out. And so it's funny that they picked that song for like this whole 80s, this show, Stranger Things. But it's cool when shit like that just pops up and you didn't even really, it wasn't even on my radar. And I had all these texts from everyone saying that the song was in the show.
You got to check the show out. That's what I mean. They've done an amazing job. I was just talking about it because Ronnie James Dio's wife, Wendy, donated a bunch of original Dio stuff for the costumes in the show, because she, one of the guys in the show, is a massive Dio fan, and he wears a jean jacket with a Dio back patch, and they wanted it to be real. So Wendy Dio donated a bunch of real artifacts to make the show legit.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You got to check it out. You got time to Netflix while you're flying?
Oh yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I don't even know if my flight's going to take off on time or if it's even going to ever even fly these days. I mean, have you traveled much lately?
I literally landed from Key West last night.
Yeah, so you've heard, like every airport is canceling flights, postponing flights. I was supposed to take a red eye back from California this past weekend, and it was supposed to leave at 9:30 p.m. West Coast time. I didn't get out of there till midnight. And so here I am landing at Logan at 8 a.m. on a red eye. How do you think I felt the next day?
Well, first of all, you felt like crap. Second of all, you walked full on balls into the worst traffic possible. And you're like, oh, my God, kill me.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I'm in traffic right now on Route 1.
And you got to make sure that you bring snacks, because a lot of the places in the airport still aren't open to get food. And the baggage handlers, there's like a baggage crisis. So you got to have supplies in your carry-on now.
Oh yeah, and then you got to be patient sitting there waiting for the luggage to come off the freaking belt.
Yeah.
I mean, everything's a mess right now.
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy, and I'm just grateful to be out of the house. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trying really hard to maintain a level of patience that does not come naturally to me, because I'm like, look, a year ago, like nothing was open and there were no concerts. And now I'm just grateful that there's stuff to do and I can get on a plane and you don't have to wear a mask. And like, so if I got to wait 10 extra minutes for my bag, like I'm trying to just find my mental happy place. But you know me, that's not easy.
Yeah, it's not easy for me either. But, you know, I try to have patience with this stuff too. I agree with you. It's nice to be back out and playing and, you know, things aren't quite back to what we remembered as normal, but, at least it's partway there.
Yeah, we're getting there. I mean, the biggest thing is, what are you taking the carry on? Now, you've done extensive traveling for decades. You've been on tour, you're flying all over the world. For people that don't travel that much, give me some expert tips on the perfect things to have in your carry on.
Well, you know, for me, it's all about entertaining myself on the plane. So if the plane doesn't have like a TV in the seat back in front of you, I have to have like an iPad, or, you know, headphones, at least to listen to music and whatever. But, I don't know. I really try not to bring that much stuff on board with me, because for everything you bring on, you know, you have to take out in those trays. And I hate like that whole routine of like, pulling shit out of the bag, and then if you forgot something, then they flag it, and then they gotta pull it out in front of you and embarrass you in front of everybody. So I don't know. I think it's more about what you don't bring than it is about what you bring.
I made it when I was in Afghanistan in 2011. I got separated from my luggage, and all I had was what was in my carry-ons, which was just recording equipment, computers, cameras. And I had nothing in Afghanistan for almost 3 days. And so I always now, no matter where I'm going, pack a change of clothes with clean socks and underwear and put it in my carry-on, because I'm always so afraid I'm not going to have my luggage when I get there.
There you go. And then, so this brings up an interesting point. I just started doing this, and this is a little tip for everybody. If you have an Apple phone, get those new little Apple tag things. Have you seen these things?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I have Apple Tags now in all my bags. So I can look on my phone or on the iPad and see that my guitar has made it onto the plane, or if it's, you know, on its way to the belt, or if you leave something behind, you can track it down so much easier than just wondering where the hell, what city it's in.
See, that's the kind of pro tip I was looking for from you. That's a great idea.
Yeah, so I stick them in my suitcase, I stick them in my guitar. And then, you know, so then I at least know where all my shit is.
The conversations that I've been having on the show since COVID, being able to like not worry when I'm sitting down talking to somebody about, ooh, I got to get into commercials or I got to do this, because it's a podcast. I can talk as long as I want about whatever I want, which is very freeing.
I bet.
It's been really interesting talking to people about how they discovered their musical ability as a kid. So how old were you when you started playing music, and what was the first instrument that you started playing way back? Because I don't think I've ever asked you that.
Well, my older brother always played guitar and sang, and his name's Jim. And he always like turned me on to like a lot of the British Invasion bands. He was always listening to the Beatles and the Stones and the Who and all that stuff. I just grew up listening to when I was a real young kid. And my aunt tells me that, you know, when I was real little, she's like, you'd know the words and sing all these songs. And so I think I just always had like a, you know, the exposure to that stuff. And then I started playing guitar. You know, I took guitar lessons and stuff when I was maybe 10 years old. Then I switched to bass when I was like in middle school, because As silly as it is, people ask me, why did you pick bass? And I'm like, it was as simple as that. There was a little garage band in my town, and they didn't have a bass player. They needed a bass player. I'm like, I'll play bass. So I went out and bought one, and ever since then, I just stuck with it.
Well, sometimes you need a gig. Yeah. And if that's the band that's what they need, then that's what you got to do.
And in hindsight, you know, for every 50 or 100 guitar players, there's only one bass player. So you'll always have a gig if you're a bass player.
You're on your way right now because they needed a bass player. So it's obviously still working.
I mean, unfortunately, you have to suffer through all the memes of people poking fun at, you know, the bass player. But actually, I love them. I pass them on to other bass players I know. We get a good laugh out of some of them.
When you were growing up and your older brother was playing all this music for you, I have this theory about music that there's the music you get gifted by the older brother, the cool uncle, your parents. And then there's a day that you declare your music independence and you say, I just discovered this. This is mine. So what was it for you that was music that you found that Jim or nobody else exposed you to? Do you remember what that was?
I'll tell you the one concert I went to that changed my life and said, okay, what those guys are doing up there, that I want to do that. Okay. I went to the Boston Garden in 1981 and saw Van Halen on the Fair Warning tour. My brother wasn't a Van Halen fan. He didn't never expose me to Van Halen. Of course, you know, it was on the radio and stuff, but it wasn't until like 81 that I saw them in person. And that concert just absolutely blew my mind. I was like, that's it. I want to be a rock star. I want to like play. I want to do what those guys are doing. And so, yeah, that was kind of my awakening, right? I think, you know, at that moment, July 1981.
When I talked to Nuno, he told me a story about the early days of Extreme. And I think it was Dweezil Zappa brought him to a Van Halen rehearsal. And he met Eddie, and Eddie let him play his gear. And he was like, I'm finally my life's dream. I'm going to sound like Eddie Van Halen. And he was so sad because he was playing Eddie's guitar on Eddie's strings with his cables, his pedals, his amp, everything. And he's like, I still sounded like me. He's like, it was crushing.
Yeah, he has told me that story as well. And that's true. You know, it's all in the fingers and it's all in the touch. You know, it's amazing.
Well, that experience got me asking guitar players about tone. And they'll get into the minutia about the strings or the, you know, the tube and the amp or whatever. But most musicians will tell me exactly what you're saying, that it's all about the fingers and the touch.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it really is. That was a surreal experience for me as well, because I got to go hang out at 5150 when Gary joined Van Halen for that ill-fated, that Van Halen 3 record. They invited me up to the studio and I got to hang out there for like a week and really got to know Eddie quite well. And that was a trip for me because, again, I when I was at the Boston Garden in 1981, I never would have imagined, you know, having an invitation to come up to the studio and be on a first name basis with those guys. And, you know, I was told, Gary, you joined my favorite fucking band. I mean, how is this possible? You know?
Kevin Martin from Candlebox told me a great story that he got paired up with Eddie Van Halen in a golf foursome unexpectedly one day. That, like, they said, Eddie is going to be our fourth. And, like, why would you assume when someone says Eddie that it's Eddie Van Halen?
I have to tell you something. Something just flipped me the fuck out. I'm driving on Route 1, there's a car right in front of me, and I swear to God, the license plate holder, the thing that goes around the license plate, is Van Halen stripes, red, black, and white, as we're sitting here talking about Van Halen. I'm not kidding you. So whoever has the Dodge 2XAN91, that is fucking badass.
That is so funny. Well, Kevin Martin told me that he spent that whole morning in a golf cart with Eddie Van Halen. And Eddie Van Halen talked about that record with Gary Cherone. And he was really sad about it and said that that those songs were just poorly executed, that he was really proud of the songs he made with Gary and that he was really sad that that the magic of the songs they wrote together weren't captured properly on the album. So I thought that was really cool that he said that.
Oh, yeah, no, he definitely loved that record. I mean, he, I think that record, Eddie had a lot more to say that, you know, he didn't really have a producer in his face for that record. And I think he went a little bit over the deep end on like the arrangements and just kind of doing what he wanted. You know, because he always had like, you know, the previous records, you know, producer was much more involved, and the singers had a lot more input as far as, you know, I think he was on a lot longer leash, put it that way.
Yeah.
And so maybe it wasn't as well received as you know, what people were used to hearing from Van Halen.
Well, that comes up a lot on the show, too, because I don't have musical ability and I can't write songs as hard as I have tried in the past. And it floors me the trust you have to have with a producer to come in and basically be the one that you pay to tell you your baby's ugly. But that's basically their job, is to be that outside voice to say, right, well, this doesn't work and maybe you should try this. That level of trust with that person, that relationship is kind of amazing to me.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't, you know, and then, you know, producers oftentimes are like a between band members, and they're, you know, they're an objective listener that, you know, they may say something that you think is the greatest thing in the world. They'll say, you know, shit, rubbish. But then you may play something that you didn't really think was that special, and they're like, oh my God, what's that thing you just played right there? That's amazing. Let's turn that into something. So it's interesting how they can be an objective ear like that. But yeah, that's kind of their role.
I just can't imagine pouring the pain and agony and emotion of like some really personal thing in my life into a song and having a person go, yeah, no, not working for me. I don't know how you don't kill that person.
Yeah, well, sometimes that happens too, you know?
When you're talking about songwriting and stuff, I started asking people this question because I'm so envious of the craft of songwriting. And so everybody, you know, we can have all the debates, right, about greatest guitar player, favorite song, best album, blah, blah, blah. This is from a songwriter's perspective. Can you give me an example or two of any genre, any artist, and give me a song that you think is a perfect example of great songwriting? Like, it's so good and well-crafted that you wish you wrote it. But then you got to tell me why, from a musical perspective.
Okay, so I have to tip my hat. Obviously, I'm a big Eagles fan, having formed an Eagles tribute band. There are certain songs that the Eagles have written, both, you know, the composition of it, the harmonies, the lyrics. You know, there's and they peaked on Hotel California. So it's hard to go, you know, to make an argument that you listen to the song Hotel, the title track Hotel California, and just lyrically how it can take you to a place, musically how, you know, the structure of the song, and obviously the guitar solo at the end that everyone can air guitar to. I mean, it's like one of the perfect songs for those reasons, you know, and there's another song, New Kid in Town, that's on that album that is just absolutely songwriting magic. They have such great hooks, and the lyrics are awesome. And then they have like this turn that changes keys, and there's a modulation, and like some of the songwriting techniques really take you to like, it adds like this whole excitement and kind of you know, it takes a little bit of a left turn where you didn't expect it to. And so, you know, for me, some of those songs are masterfully written. And, you know, of course, it's mind boggling to think of the Beatles, whole catalog. And of course, you know, that's an easy thing to just point your finger and go, oh, everyone's going to say the Beatles. But
yeah, but there's many examples though.
And when you think how they went from like the Love Me Do to the era to like Strawberry Fields or something, in such a short period of time, and took a whole generation of people with them, and they were only in their 20s. When you think of the hit after hit, you know, those guys were super young when they were doing that. And of course, George Martin was an amazing producer that they just worked well together, and he came up with a lot of the instrumentation and some of the stuff in those songs that he was like the fifth Beatle. You can see all the documentaries about that stuff. But to me, that catalog is untouchable.
Did you watch that Abbey Road docuseries, the Peter Jackson thing?
Oh yeah,
dude. When you're sitting there watching Paul McCartney and you know the lyric that he's hasn't thought of yet, I was like, oh my God.
I know. When he was writing Get Back, you just like had like goosebumps going, holy shit, I just watched the birth of that song.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah. And
it was crazy.
I love the McCartney 3-2-1 thing that he did with Rick Rubin too, which was just totally different in the way that they analyze the individual tracks of songs.
Yeah. Well, I actually missed that. I haven't seen that, but I can only imagine.
Paul McCartney said something that it totally changed the way I listen. Cause I am, when people ask me who my favorite band is, I say the Beatles every time. They're just, I look at that as one of the greatest gifts my mother ever gave me. Because she loved the Beatles and passed that love on to me. And Paul McCartney kind of analyzed why the Lennon-McCartney songwriting partnership worked. And I brought it up on the show before. He cited the difference in upbringings, in family parental upbringings, as why their partnership, because Paul McCartney's music was happy in melody and positive in lyrical content because he grew up in an idyllic kind of middle class family that was functional. And John Lennon grew up in a dysfunctional kind of broken home. And so his melodies were sad and his lyrics were sad and cynical and depressing. And so as Paul McCartney's telling Rick Rubin this like light bulb went off in my head, because the reason why their songs work is that on a happy Paul McCartney melody, there's sad and cynical John Lennon lyrics and then vice versa.
Yeah. True.
And when I went back and listened, I was like, holy shit, that was there the whole time. And I never picked up on it.
And then they had parts of songs that were just like, you know, one guy wrote one bit of the song and the other guy wrote the other bit. And when they put them together, sometimes, you know, there were two different songs, but they blended them into one. And you're like, it takes twists and turns like within the song.
Yeah.
To your very point, you know. It can go from a happy place to a sad place or a cynical place, like in a drop of a hat, you know?
I talked to Sully from Godsmack about the Bernie Taupin, Elton John dynamic. And like, I don't know any other songwriter or musician that would be able to function within the confines of having someone hand you finished lyrics and have no input on the melody and vice versa. Like that, to me, that relationship, I just don't understand it. And every other songwriter I've ever talked to is like, don't know how you do that.
Yeah, that is kind of an odd one. A strange relationship. But hey, it worked for those guys all these years.
Did you discover anything new about the Eagles catalog when the Dark Desert Eagles started and you started really digging into the catalog? Did you discover songs that you in the time when they came out like kind of missed?
Well, you know, I was you know, I'd bought the album The Long Run, like literally walked into the record store when it came out, and I at the time I had the Greatest Hits record, but I didn't have a lot of the rest of the catalog. You know, I didn't have the records. I just basically had the Greatest Hits, and then I had The Long Run. And then obviously sometimes, you know, you have those experiences where you get into one record and then you start, you know, delving back into the stuff that you hadn't heard yet. And, obviously Hotel California was, you know, their biggest record except for the, do you know that the Greatest Hits and Hotel California are the number one and number three best-selling albums of all time?
Yeah, it's insane. It's like one out of every six people on the planet has a copy of that.
Yeah, and like to think that the Eagles' Greatest Hits is the best-selling album of all time, and it doesn't even have Hotel California on it. It's unbelievable. So I don't know. You know, I think it, as time went on, I have a box set and stuff. A lot of the early stuff, you know, there was stuff that was filler on there. But obviously they had those, you know, they struck gold with a handful of massive hits that, you know, they just couldn't be denied. And they ended up being one of the biggest bands on the planet.
And you can't deny the success that the individual band members had outside of the Eagles, too. It's insane.
Yeah, of course. Joe Walsh's career, you know, Glenn Frey had a handful of hits after the Eagles. Don Henley obviously had the most hits of anybody after the Eagles. But yeah, it's incredible the amount of, you know, talent in that band. And they had five lead singers in the band, you know. It's mind-boggling.
Most bands can't survive one lead singer.
Well, I think maybe that's why they didn't get along. They were notorious for infighting and, you know, all that shit. But yeah, it's tough. I can't imagine having four or five lead singers. It's bad enough. Now, actually, Gary's the easiest lead singer you'd ever run into. Sweetest guy. No.
Yeah, it really, you did really luck out with, you know, with the singer you got. Not only can he still hit all the notes and he's still an amazing, captivating front man, but he's never been a dick.
Exactly. Yep. He's just, he's one of a kind. And you know, All the heat he took for in that Van Halen thing, it used to just piss me off so much because people didn't know what a sweetheart of a guy is.
Now, you're going to be in town a bunch, so let's run down the shows. This Saturday, June 25th, you're going to be at Indian Ranch with Dark Desert Eagles. The Dark Desert
Correct.
Eagles next month, July 22nd, will be at the Hampton Beach Casino. And then
which happens to be my birthday.
July 22nd?
Yeah, I'm playing on my birthday.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
It's about to get real.
Yeah. That's going to be a fun one.
And then Extreme has got a bunch of shows all in a row in early September. Extreme's going to be at Indian Ranch on September 3rd, the Hampton Beach Casino Ballroom on September... No, Indian Ranch on September 2nd, Hampton on September 3rd, and then this little gig with this little band at this little venue on September 8th.
Yeah, that one I have circled on my calendar because it is going to be a special night as long as it ends up happening. I'm trying not to get too excited about it only because it was supposed to happen in 2020, and then it got... postponed to 21, and now it's scheduled for September 8th, and we are supposed to be opening direct support for a little band called Aerosmith at this little venue called Fenway Park. And you know, COVID had a different plan for it in 2020, and now that it's coming up, it's creeping up, and then you know, a couple weeks ago, they announced that Steven Tyler is canceling a bunch of dates and going into rehab. So I'm like, okay, I think the show's cursed. It's never going to happen. So I'm trying not to get too excited about it in case it doesn't happen.
Well, everything that I've read that the band has said is that Steven's doing great in treatment. It was a voluntary thing after his surgery. And that the shows in September are still going to happen. So I'm counting on it that it's going to happen. And we're going to get a super healthy Steven Tyler, which that's the best Steven Tyler there is.
Yeah, that's everything I heard too. So as far as I know, the show's on, I don't think I'm supposed to announce this, but just keep your eye out for them. There may be another date in and around there that Extreme's going to be playing.
Interesting.
That's all I can say about that.
That's very interesting. Could you have imagined that, you know, being the kid at the Garden watching Van Halen, that A, they'd allow concerts at Fenway Park, and B, that you'd be opening up for Aerosmith there? Like, it's kind of insane.
It is really insane. I mean, of course, you know, when I was growing up in the 70s, Aerosmith, they were like, you know, Boston gods to us. But then, as we all know, they kind of faltered there, and they had some, you know, substance abuse issues. They had band member changes and all that stuff. So I never really saw them back in the heyday. Not until they did their big, you know, comeback in the 80s, you know, with Permanent Vacation and Pump and all that stuff. And then, you know, Extreme toured with them for a while. We did a couple of runs with Aerosmith. So it was, that was pretty surreal. And I have to say, I've at least on the bucket list, I've checked off the box of opening for Aerosmith, and we've opened for them in some soccer stadiums, like over in Europe, like huge crowds. But the idea of playing at Fenway Park and having our friends and family and stuff there is just, it's going to be an epic night. And, you know, obviously, you know, the gig of the year that I'm just circled on the calendar. Like, I can't wait for that show. I'm not wishing summer to be over by any means, but I'm definitely looking forward to that date.
I got to interview the Foo Fighters when they played at Fenway. And I don't know if I was more excited to interview the Foo Fighters or to interview the Foo Fighters in the Red Sox locker room. And I walked in and I was like, oh my God. And Dave Grohl was like, you've never been in here? And I was like, why would I have ever been allowed in here? Like, this is the Red Sox dressing. Like, why would I be in the locker room of the Sox? Are you kidding me? He's like, you want to go through the drawers? I was like, yes, I do.
That's great.
Of course I do.
Yeah, no, it would be, you know, it's kind of for us, it is surreal. Because Extreme started in Kenmore Square, you know, playing the Rat. And at Narcissus and Celebration, all those places, and so to finally step foot on that field, and play to that audience, it's surreal.
Don't forget about the legendary gig you did in 1987 at Lemonster High School, okay? Because I was there, Pat. Don't take that away from me.
Lemonster High, huh?
Yes, I still have the shirt. Know?
Isn't that great?
Don't take that away from me.
Don't forget the legendary softball game we played.
That was the first day of my internship at WAAF, July 1st, 1991. Still have the shirt.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I wish I still had the shirt.
I still have mine.
Yeah, we played, I remember, AAF versus Extreme. And, I brought a couple of my high school buddies that actually play softball as ringers for the team. I mean, it's not like, you know, we're not athletic guys in Extreme, but I'm like, I better bring a couple of guys that can, like, put the ball over the center field wall.
Okay? Yeah, well, that's what the crowd wants, right? And you can't get beat by a bunch of fat radio DJs. It just looks bad.
But yeah, truth be told, after all these years, I'm confessing to you that I had a couple of ringers on the team.
I had a feeling. It's like, wait, that guy's not in the band. He just plays the triangle. Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, that's one of our roadies.
Yeah,
no,
he exactly.
Never carried equipment.
Yeah.
That's my high school buddies.
Well, I know I'm going to see you a bunch this summer and in the fall because you got all these gigs coming up. So I'm happy that A, shows are happening again, and B, that you're going to be around a ton because I can't wait to see you.
I hope you come out to some of these shows.
Oh, I definitely will be. I definitely will be. Maybe I'll sing happy birthday to you up at Hampton because, you know, the vocal stylings of this velvety voice that I have singing happy birthday, it's the thing of legends, Pat.
Do you still have the purple hair?
Come on. Of course I do.
Well, I don't know. All right. Well, I didn't know if it changed to another shade of, you know, like, you know, some people when they color their hair. Yeah, so it's still purple.
When I launched the podcast and MistressCarrie.com and all that, I had all new logos made. And that's part of the logo now. And let me give you a little secret. You confessed about the ringers on the softball team. If your logo is you and your purple hair, your hairdresser becomes a tax deduction.
Ah.
Who's the dummy now, Pat?
That's a nice little trick there. I see what you're doing there.
So yeah, the hair's still purple, and I'm going to be that 80-year-old lady with the purple hair that just people are like, she must be insane, and the answer will be, yeah, she is.
I love it.
Why change?
I love it. Why change?
Yeah.
You got something working for you. What, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I'll know whether you if you're there or if you're just lying to me saying you're coming to the show, you don't show up because it's hard to miss the purple hair. Okay.
I will be there for sure. I will be there for sure. Enjoy your flight to Cleveland. I hope they don't lose your baggage.
Nope, I got my Apple AirTags all in those bags and in my bass guitar case. And, yeah, it should be fun. We're playing at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So I've been there once before, but it's always fun, you know, going through that place. And that's a trip in and of itself. You know?
Hell yeah. They've got some really, really cool artifacts. And, you know, there aren't a lot of reasons to go to Cleveland. That's one of them.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if you remember going back to Beatles. You know, they have like John Lennon's outfit from Sgt. Pepper's in there, like the green satin outfit.
Yeah. Stuff.
And you're like, wow, I can't even believe I'm standing next to this thing, you know?
I know. It is really cool.
I'm looking
cool.
forward to going up. Yeah. Did you ever go on Johnny Cash's bus?
No.
Tour bus?
No.
Yeah. They had that parked outside, which is pretty cool. I don't know if they still have that, but that's just to walk into a tour bus from back in, you know, the 60s or 70s, whenever that he had that bus. It was interesting to see, you know, similar to cars, you know, how, you know, it's like an old classic car, but a tour bus, you know.
Well, it's crazy to me how much that stuff sells for at auction. Like, did you see the guitar that Kurt Cobain played in the Smells Like Teen Spirit video? It just sold at auction for $4.5 million.
I heard about that. Yeah.
It's crazy. Well,
it is insane. But, hey, somebody out there got that kind of money and wanted to have it. So, all the power to them.
Yeah.
You know, people pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for baseball or whatever.
I know.
You're like, all right, well, I don't get deep pockets like that. I mean, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you got to feed the alpacas.
The only baseball I can afford is Dick's Sporting Goods, you know?
Well, you could probably steal a couple at Fenway in September.
Maybe.
You got to ask them to let you in the batter's box, man. Bring your friends from high school, those ringers from the AAF game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's going to be a trip to be in there. So everyone, fingers crossed that show's going to happen.
I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
Be amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, have fun navigating the rest of Route 1 and the rest of Logan Airport. Enjoy that.
Thank you very much. We'll catch up with you soon. It's been great talking to you, Carrie.
There he is, Pat Badger from Extreme. And yes, he made it to the airport just fine. You can see him with his band, the Dark Desert Eagles, coming up this Saturday, June 25th at Indian Ranch in Webster, Massachusetts. They're also going to be at the Hampton Beach Casino on July 22nd. And then all of those Extreme gigs at Indian Ranch in Webster on September 2nd, the Hampton Beach Casino Ballroom on September 3rd, and at Fenway Park with Aerosmith on September 8th. Check the show notes for the links to all of the shows so you can get tickets, and they're all featured on the events calendar at MistressCarrie.com. Also linked in the show notes is the corresponding playlist for this episode. I make a playlist for every full-length episode of the Mistress Carrie podcast that's filled not only with my guest music, but all of the music that we talked about in the interview. You'll also find links to find Pat Badger online, the Dark Desert Eagles online, Extreme online, and you'll find all of my social links as well. If you liked what you heard, don't forget to like and subscribe to the Mistress Carrie podcast. New full-length episodes come out every Wednesday, plus every weekday you get the Sit Rep. The Situation Report is all of your rock news, music headlines, and industry info in less than 5 minutes. The Mistress Carrie podcast, a proud member of the Pantheon Podcast Network.